The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
All right, everybody. Hour number two on day number one of the month of April and day number one of our week back together. Once again, thanking Paul Gleiser and Chad Hasty for filling in last week. So grateful to them for their talents and grateful to you for hanging out that week, and thankful to Rhonda and Matt and Nikki for keeping everything nailed down and in good order last week when a whole bunch of things happened. Just the quick recap, the resolution, well, it's resolved for some, of all the Ken Paxton matters. We will, at the bottom of this hour, talk to State Representative and Dr. Tom Oliverson of Northwest Houston. He has already announced, that he wants to run for Speaker of the Texas House. We deeply need an upgrade at that position, and we may be taking care of it at the district level on May 28th. As David Covey may beat Dade Phelan in his own district and send him packing out of the House of Representatives itself, even if Phelan somehow manages to survive this runoff. And it's hard if you're an incumbent and you are forced into a runoff. It means that more than half of the voters did not want you. And when that happens, there tends to there's sort of a blood in the water kind of phenomenon. It's like, whoa, what? We can actually take this guy out. So all of the folks, the incumbents who are running, who are forced to run in runoffs, all these folks have it's a tall order. It's going to be tough in District 58 for Dwayne Burns facing the challenge from Helen Kerwin. It's going to be tough for Lynn Stuckey facing the challenge from Andy Hopper. It's going to be tough for Frederick Frazier facing the challenge from Carissa Richardson. It's going to be really tough for Justin Holland facing the challenge from Katrina Pearson. So and for Dade Phelan to be in a runoff, I still can't believe that actually happened. So whether he survives that or not, I'm thinking not, we will have a vacancy at Speaker and need somebody to fill that that role. And Dr. Tom Oliverson had a statement when he announced, that was week before last, it was before I left, and he had some things to say about the manner in which the Paxton impeachment had been handled, about the manner in which the House has been run, and they seemed to be antithetical to the Phelan style and Phelan's tastes and his personal vendettas. Yet on the Paxton impeachment itself, Dr. Oliverson was not present. How would he have voted if he were? If he had been, I will ask him coming up at 8:35. We had the ship hit the bridge. I've been on that bridge 50 times. Baltimore was just up the road from the Maryland suburbs of D.C. where I was growing up, but, you know, had friends up there in Balmer, had folks who were, you know, when I was in college days, or folks I knew who were going to the UMBC, University of Maryland, Baltimore County. And so that stretch of 695 was pretty, it's spooky. It's like, I wasn't on that bridge at 1:30 in the morning very often, and there weren't very many people who were, but that was so weird. The whole thing just loses power. It's dead. Well, it's not dead in the water. It's dead, but it's moving. And apparently from the bridge, the folks who called, they had no communication. Cell phones worked. So they got a hold of like some harbor master guy and said, call the cops, shut down the bridge, both directions. 'Cause, Yeah, we're sailing blind, and we're going to hit that bridge. And there's video, of course, of everything. And that thing drops like it's made out of Legos. Weesh. So I don't know if that's an indictment of infrastructure. I mean, how many bridges could have withstood that? And then watching Pete Buttigieg, the ultimate diversity hire at as Secretary of Transportation, just whatever. The lives lost is, of course, a terrible thing. They plucked a couple of people from the water, some folks not. But the quick thinking from the bridge of that ship apparently saved a number of lives. So good, good, good. A couple of lives lost while I was away, one in politics and one in movies. And I liked both guys very, very much. And one, of course, was longtime Connecticut senator, longtime Democrat, but then an independent, Joe Lieberman. I remember, gosh, what year was it? 2004. Right? Bush was president, and it was like the Democrats were all gathering in a scrum to see who would try to take him out. It wound up being John Kerry, but not before a challenge from a lot of fellow Democrats, including Joe Lieberman. So I'm in the lobby of the Holiday Inn in Manchester, New Hampshire, and, you know, we're just following everybody around, Bill Bradley and Kerry and Joe Lieberman. And Lieberman was always just one of the most comfortable in his own skin. You got the real guy. It wasn't a lot of posturing. It wasn't a lot of glaze. It wasn't a lot of phoniness. He was just a wonderful, wonderful man with a profound heart for service and views that were not as wildly liberal as the Democrat Party would soon demand, which is why he left the party to become an independent. But at the time, he was indeed a Democrat. And he sensed that, he told me, he didn't coin it with me standing there, but he was starting to use it, that he sensed that New Hampshire would be where we would see a phenomenon that he referred to as Joe-mentum. And we all thought that was adorable. Well, the Joe-mentum thing did not exactly happen. John Kerry wound up being the nominee. But what did happen was a lifetime career of dignity and grace and service. So just a big celebration of the life of Joe Lieberman. And one of my favorite actors, Louis Gossett Jr. Oh, was he like 87 or some such, from Officer and a Gentleman? You want to go see something cheesy and great? Dennis Quaid and Louis Gossett in a weird little sci-fi thing called Enemy Mine. Dennis Quaid is an astronaut, and they're at war with, what are they called, the Drax or something like that, and they all look like they're made of rock or something. It's the hours in the makeup chair must have been something. But I think there's some crash, and they wind up, he and this other guy, the alien is played by Louis Gossett Jr., and it always refers to Dennis Quaid as Earthman. And it's just, it's cheesy, but it's good cheese, you know? It's like some fine Dutch Gouda, which you can certainly get on the island of Aruba. And so Enemy Mine is just a cool, just and anything Louis Gossett Jr. was in. But if you miss that one, it's something to do to celebrate the life of Louis Gossett Jr. So, speaking of celebrating things, let's talk about a couple of different types of celebration. The Ken Paxton fan base is probably glad to have some of those matters behind him with the settlement, not a plea deal. Nothing was pled to. We'll talk a little bit about more with that, about that with Tom Oliverson at 8:35. But of course, Easter was also celebrated and on, over the past weekend and on Face the Nation, the Catholic Bishop of Washington, Wilton Gregory, and the Episcopal Bishop, Marianne Boody, were on Face the Nation with Ed O'Keefe. And so he's sitting there with a couple of high-level clergy folks on Easter weekend, which is certainly appropriate. And they talked about some things.
Major candidates we have running for president invoke Christianity. I know this gets a little tricky, but we have one who is now selling Bibles that also have copies of the Constitution and a Bill of Rights in them. But the other is the second Catholic president who goes to church every Sunday, who observes the holy days of obligation and builds his schedule around them.
Now, how about the obligation to protect life? How about the obligation to protect scriptural beliefs on Easter Sunday by not making it, and again, and as Mike and I describe, the National Trans Day of Visibility has been there for a good while, but does this oh-so-devout Catholic president need to parade that around to the chagrin of anyone with a shred of scriptural values? And honestly, a word or two about the Trump Bible, I think it's fantastic. Anything he puts a Bible in somebody's hands, you kidding me? Now, if he's sitting there going through Leviticus and saying, you know, I'm going to win huge in 2024, you know, that'd be one thing. But this is, and I love this, the people they don't like that the Bill of Rights, you know, the Constitution, Declaration of Independence are in there as well. It is a volume for people who love God and country, people who love God and this country. Who in the world could find fault with that? And I know that what some people, you know, Trump's trying to, you know, co-opt God or faith or whatever. Well, look, nobody can be dragged into liking a candidate they don't like. But sticking, you know, your brand onto a shipment of Bibles won't make people like you if they don't already. The fact of the matter is that the evangelical vote is a Trump vote. And this continues to be to the mystification of many. And it's not because Trump has walked like the perfect evangelical walk in his entire life. That's certainly not true. But who among us has? But what Trump did as president is what he will do as president again if we have our act together. And that is to protect people of all faith and their religious freedom against the woke fascist nonsense that seeks to marginalize your scriptural beliefs. So that's why Trump is popular among evangelicals, if you needed some help with that.
But doesn't talk at all publicly and is uncomfortable speaking about his own faith. Are you comfortable with the role and the level of Christianity in our politics today?
Where's faith?
This is Wilton Gregory, Catholic Bishop of D.C.
Used to be the voice, the moral voice that political people, whether they adhered to everything, they would turn to find the moral compass with faith. I think in some cases, it's the political world that's beginning to set or claiming to set the moral voice. We've switched position. There is a great need, I believe, to place faith in its proper position, which is not necessarily antagonistic to the political arena, but to seize the responsibility of being that guiding principle, that moral light for our people to turn to.
And we used to be able to unite around that because obviously there are people who are always going to have political differences about the way certain earthly matters should be run. But wow, the hijacking of faith. Listen, I'll just share one. Hang on a second. Let me find this because this is just exhibit A. Hang on a second. This was Twitter land over the weekend. Here we go. My buddy Joe Walsh, not the guitarist, but the former Illinois congressman turned talk show host turned Trump hater. I couldn't stay out of this one. He said, here's the irony. If all these Christians who are complaining about the transgender day of visibility falling on Easter this year actually asked the guy who rose from the dead 2,000 years ago, the guy they all celebrate today, what he thinks, he would tell them, quit complaining. What a glorious thing it is. Let's rejoice in this serendipity and embrace our transgender brothers and sisters. Okay. My reply to this was that, of course, Jesus would tell us all to embrace our transgender brothers and sisters. Of course, he would embrace them, but he would embrace them in biblical truth.
And the notion that Jesus would sign on to or elevate this mental illness is blasphemy. And things like Joe engages in here are part of the modern narcissism, the self-absorption that seeks to pervert and twist Scripture itself to our own social and political views. Anyway, all right, 824. We'll grab a call or two here next.
A world become one of salads and sun. Only a fool would say.
From the very first Steely Dan album, Can't Buy a Thrill. Only a fool would say that. Songs with fool as the theme on this April Fool's Day. Alrighty, we are in Dallas. Brad, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you, sir?
Oh, great. Thank you, Mark.
Hi.
I was just calling to comment that I thought, you know, as a Catholic, Joe Biden should have really exercised his executive function and say that we're going to push this off to a Monday holiday via the Monday holiday bill, and it more appropriately would have fallen on April Fool's Day.
It would indeed. It's a shocker. This is actually one thing that Biden does not have control over, and I know, but your point is satirical and well-placed. It wasn't the first time I've had somebody say, well, why don't they just, make it another day? Are you kidding me? The people who are behind the National Trans Day of Visibility, the Human Rights Campaign or some such, they loved the fact that it was on Easter, loved the in your face to those terrible Bible believing Christians who refused to sign on to trans lunacy. They loved this accident of the calendar. Alrighty, no accident. Dr. Tom Oliverson is with us coming out of the 8:30 news. Let's hop into there because he wants to be Speaker of the Texas House, whether Dade Phelan survives his runoff or not. Let's meet him next. 8:30, Nikki's in the newsroom.
Waiting for you, baby. I might change your mind. But maybe I'm a fool. Still loving you.
The late, great Eddie Money, Maybe I'm a Fool. Various fool-related songs on this April Fool's Day. I just think there are no musical birthdays. Well, not many, anyway, of note. So you had to have some kind of gimmick. So why not for this April Fool's Day? Well, it is no April Fool. I got to tell you, if you'd have told me some weeks ago that Dade Phelan would be forced into a runoff in his own district. You remember the shows. Everybody said, well, Mark, do you think that the David Covey can beat Dade Phelan? I said, well, yeah. I mean, the passions seem to be running pretty high. Folks did not like the Paxton impeachment. They do like school choice. They do not like Democrats as chair of key committees. They don't like the way the House is run in conservative Republican voter ranks. But even if you throw all those things into the hopper, it's just really hard to beat an incumbent, especially one who's Speaker of the House. But darn it, David Covey didn't actually get more votes. But nobody got to 50, so that is a runoff. But here's the interesting thing. Whether Dade Phelan survives this runoff or not, a lot of people were saying, look, no matter what happens, he's sufficiently damaged goods that he's not going to be Speaker of the House anymore. So, okay, maybe. If he loses, obviously we'll have a vacancy there and need a new speaker. So who might that be? So before I even left for vacation, there was, out of House District 130, northwest of Houston, the lovely community of Cypress and its surrounding burbs, Dr. Tom Oliverson, who is running for speaker and who joins us. Welcome, sir. How are you doing?
Thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Let's meet you. I mean, I've known you just as a follower of the legislature, but let's run through the bio. Where'd you grow up and what kind of doctor are you?
Yeah, so I was actually born in Minnesota, but I got to Texas when I was 5 years old. Mm-hmm. I've lived in the Houston area, so I like to say I got here as quick as I could.
Yes, sir.
I graduated from Kingwood High School. I went to Sam Houston State University. I got my medical degree at Baylor College of Medicine. And I've been in private practice in anesthesiology in the Tomball-Cypress area since 2004. I was first elected in 2017. I have always been on the insurance committee since I've been there. That's kind of been one of my big policy areas. In addition to being the chair of insurance for the last two sessions, I'm actually the president of the National Council of Insurance Legislators, which is a 50-state organization of state lawmakers that basically set model policies and help the commissioners provide a good competitive marketplace for insurance products across all 50 states.
Very cool. What made you decide? I mean, would you have wanted to run for speaker even if Dade Phelan had prevailed? I mean, just what were the factors that you assembled to say, you know what, I'm going to run for speaker of the Texas House?
Yeah, and I think that's a great question. And it was a process, right? I don't think anybody just wakes up one day and says, hey, I'm going to run for speaker. From where I was sitting in my vantage point, I think that the way that this session played out and a lot of the decisions that were made were frustrating to me. I saw a lot of my colleagues marginalized, sort of pushed out of the way. Dictatorships tend to run pretty efficiently, right? Because there's not a lot of discussion. And I think that I saw a lot of that. Paxson impeachment, you mentioned that. That kind of hit all of us like an atom bomb, right? I mean, nobody knew that was coming. It was so sneaky and so close to the vest and such a cloak and dagger kind of deal that we were all just like, what is this? What is this? And then, of course, the failure to pass school choice, you mentioned that. That was something that I think was very important. Obviously, the final straw, I would say, is that, you know, I woke up the day after primaries and looked at the carnage, and it just sort of hit me square between the eyes that, you know, the people are calling for something different. And you can't get any more clear than to have that many incumbents defeated and a whole bunch of more Senate runoffs, including the speaker, than to say that the direction that we're going is not the direction that the electorate wants us to be going. So change is needed. A paradigm shift is needed. Not just, hey, we're going to get a new leader, but keep the same team in place. Right. I would argue that the same team essentially has been running things since 2019. We just, you know, Dade Phelan was sort of took over for Dennis Bonin, but essentially it's been the same playbook that's been run since 2019.
Have you guys been?
People don't want that.
No. Have you guys been generally collegial? And I mean, I think in your statement, I think you said that the House tends to be a collegial body. We all like to try to get along, but there have been some odd rifts that you think have just not served the state well.
No, that's right. I think we are very collegial and we are very bipartisan. And I would point out that, you know, greater than 90% of the legislation that we pass is just good governance. It's just good policy. And it doesn't matter who's carrying it. It could be the most conservative Republican. It could be the most progressive Democrat. And it's still going to pass because it's just good stuff, right? I mean, we need to pay our bills. We need to cut back on onerous regulations. We need to think about new and innovative ways to provide better educational systems, more affordable healthcare, better infrastructure, all of the things that a growing state like ours needs to keep the buses running on time, right? That's not a partisan thing. But I do think that the current system that we have depends on a coalition government of Republicans and Democrats, you know, in the quote back hallway, as we say, making decisions about what happens next. And the problem with that is that if you as the speaker are depending on members of the minority party to keep you in power, then you have to please them. You have to do things for them. You have to give them stuff.
So, and I want to get to what some of those examples might be. You mentioned the Paxton impeachment vote as having been a kind of a riveting moment. And there were like 60 some Republicans who went along with that. You were not one of them because you didn't vote at all. Why not?
I wasn't there. So this is part of when I say this dropped on us like an atom bomb. So. Mm-hmm. My oldest son graduated from high school that weekend, and we had, in addition to his graduation, we had a big celebration for him with all of his relatives and everybody at the house. And look, this is literally the last weekend of session, and there's nothing going on. So I had finished all of my work. We didn't have any more bills to vote on. It was just conference committee reports, mm-hmm. taking care of all that. And I had said weeks before I wasn't going to be there because of this graduation. And so then when that dropped, it was just like, I'll tell you the interesting thing, though, is that there was a lot of pressure to vote for me, even in my absence, even if I wasn't there, that someone should vote for me.
Help everybody understand whether we allow that. How's that work?
Well, we do, you know, theoretically, if a member is not at their desk, mm-hmm. Then. And this happens all the time, right? You can have a situation where somebody's literally across the chamber talking to a member about a bill,
right?
And somebody will vote for them.
Is that good? Do we like that?
I mean, I think it's from a housekeeping standpoint, I think it's impossible for the House members really to do their job and their work if they're constantly sitting at their desk, because what we found out during COVID, of course, is that when everybody's wandering around wearing masks and has to be separated and, you know, follow all the quote rules and stuff, that now we're sort of like, gotcha. Why did we do that?
Exactly.
Right? You need to be able to talk to your colleagues to get things done.
Yeah, and it's not like there's a track record of somebody, somebody voted for me and it wasn't what I wanted. It doesn't seem like, I guess, we've been ill-served with it. Did you know?
Right. And you can change your vote, too. Yeah, sure. So, right? That's the other thing.
So I would totally accept the excuse on such a solid family basis. Did you totally know how this was going to go, that it would be that a wave of Republicans would vote for impeachment?
I did not. I actually didn't know how it was going to go because, like I said, we were not given a whole lot of hours to actually think this through before we went on the floor. Mm-hmm. And there will be people that will disagree with me on this, but I do think that there was some pressure that was applied. There was sort of a, you know, we've done all the work for you. You don't really need to talk to the witnesses. You don't really need to examine the documents. Yep. And you can just trust us and just pull the lever and do what we tell you to do.
So can we get from you the assurance right now that had you been there, you would have voted no on impeachment?
Yeah, I would have.
Okay.
I would have. Like a lot of my colleagues in Harris County, for the simple reason that this was not a good process. This was rushed. And it was one of these situations where you can't really look yourself in the mirror. A lot of us couldn't, and feel confident that you had made the right decision.
Dr. Tom Oliverson is here, state rep, District 130, and running for speaker. So there are a lot of ways in which people say we have a Dade Phelan problem. And one of them is the Democrat chairs, and one of them is let me have you answer something that a lot of the folks who have defended him will say. A lot of his lieutenants, a lot of his posse, his supporters will say, look at constitutional carry, heartbeat bill, property tax relief. There was a long list of huge conservative victories that were achieved this past session. Stop complaining about Dade Phelan. To which you would say what?
I mean, I would agree that we passed a lot of good things with him as speaker. There's no question of that. But I would also point out that each of those sessions, there were things that we didn't pass and we didn't do. And some of that happens as a result of, as I pointed out earlier, when you depend on members of the minority party to keep you propped up, you have to give them stuff. And so one of the things that we've done historically is that there's something that just doesn't quite make it across the finish line. And then we're supposed to go home and remind the voters that, well, you know, we tried, you know, we just ran out of time. How many times have you heard that, Mark?
Plenty.
We just ran out of time.
Yeah.
Right. And the reality is that none of that happens randomly. That's all scripted. You know, when you have a bill that gets set on the last calendar, halfway down the calendar, and it's a conservative priority bill, that's a high five to the minority party.
So what are the
it
things?
Is. So, I'm sorry,
so,
but it
no,
is.
No, indeed so. You'll get no pushback from me on that. So school choice, outright obstructionism on school choice, even from many Republicans, and they're paying a price for that. What would be, what are some things that just didn't happen in this admittedly conservative leaning session? What are some things that were missing, the things that didn't happen that you wish had happened?
Well, I would say in this particular session, it seems as though that the deal that was made ahead of time was to really put a thumb on voter integrity measures. Mm-hmm. And I think we saw this very clearly. I saw this firsthand. I had one of the only measures that passed. There were only three, as I recall, that passed. I had one of them along with Senator Betancourt, my state senator, and it was sort of, we were under sort of this strict instruction that you have to work with the Democrats and they have to be okay with the bill, even though they're not going to vote for it. And those were the instructions we were given. Those were the instructions that the chair was given. You know, and so there were good bills out there, a lot of good bills that never even saw the light of day. And I think that, you know, I wasn't in the room. I don't know what the conversation was. But, Mark, I think the voters aren't stupid, right? They can look and they can say, there seems to be something missing here. Oh, right, voter integrity. What did we do on that? well, gosh, there's all these bills that seem like they got hung up in the House and never made it across the finish line. Why is that? Is it because it was bad policy? I don't think it was because it was bad policy.
Then what was the holdup? What do people not want? I mean, I understand the argument of those who oppose school choice. I disagree with it completely, but I understand the point that they make. What's the bugaboo about voter integrity?
Yeah, I can't answer that question, Mark, because obviously I was on the other side on that pushing for voter integrity measures. I mean, that's something that, at least where I am in Harris County, as you well know, that is a huge issue for
us. A little bit.
You know, I had legislation that would have essentially given the Secretary of State the ability to come into a county that either committed fraud or committed incompetence and essentially take over the process. We called it the takeover bill, right? If you're going to be that incompetent, and incompetence is the new version of voter fraud, then we're just going to have to do it ourselves.
Indeed.
And that essentially got watered down to the point where what it was essentially a bill where the Secretary of State, upon receiving a complaint, could investigate. And if the investigation led to a concern that there was irregularities or there was a lack of efficiency and a lot of incompetence in the process, then the Secretary of State had the ability to provide oversight, meaning that they could watch over your shoulder while you were doing your work, and they could make a recommendation that somebody be terminated.
Gotcha. State Rep and Dr. Tom Oliverson is here. Just another couple of minutes. Do you think Dade will survive his runoff?
You know, I don't know. I don't know. He faces some pretty strong headwinds, but he's been a good member for his district. And I hope that the people in his district, I know there's some things that they're pretty unhappy about, but I hope that people will consider the fact that in Southeast Texas, he has been a very good member. He has done a lot of really good things for those communities. And so I don't know.
I guess it's really a question I ask. I mean, do you envision running against him? I mean, is it easier for you to win if he's not even in the race?
I'm not sure. I can't answer that question. I guess we'll see sort of how it shakes up. We're obviously preparing for both possibilities. Mm-hmm. I am strongly committed to the new paradigm that I outlined, and we'll see where it goes. I think that what the people of Texas have been asking for is for somebody to stand up and just say, look, I've heard you and I hear you, and we're going to actually unite as a majority party, and we're going to do business as a majority. And most other states do it this way. And as far as I know, states still pass budgets and still do all the important things. It's not like all the state capitals around the country that have majority-only chairs have suddenly just stopped working.
And let's take our last 30, 45 seconds on exactly how this will go. Rather than just throwing it open and needing a whole lot of Democrat votes to get to a majority, you're talking about the Republicans caucusing, picking one candidate, and then it's simply a given that every Republican votes for that candidate, correct?
That's right. That's the process that we have, and that's the process I'm committed to following. And so, you know, I think what we need to do is start the session off with 76 Republicans united behind one candidate first.
Mm-hmm.
What I don't want to hear, and what I hope that the people listening will be very carefully paying attention to, is that traditionally we've never followed that process because the reality is that somebody always pre-announces, hey, I've got 76 votes. The race is over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, show us who you got. Well, I can't really do that. Well, it turns out that, you know, they've got 40 Republicans or maybe 45 Republicans,
yep,
but the rest are Democrats.
And is your early announcement designed to, listen, there are a lot of, you're singing from a hymnal that a lot of people have been singing from, and you've tapped into what seems to be the flavor of the moment and the flavor of the at least immediate future in Texas. Is it designed to prevent like 10 guys from running? What do you think the competition will be like?
No, I think there will be other candidates that will step in. My hope is, and the reason that I announced when I announced, is because I know for a fact in my heart, I believe that what I articulated a couple of Thursdays ago is exactly what the voters have been asking for. So I wanted to set the bar. I wanted to be the first one out there, the herald, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But there'll be other candidates. And look, if somebody else is a better candidate, and that's what the folks want to unite around, as long as they're adhering to the platform that I acknowledged, I am perfectly okay being John the Baptist, right? I mean, I hope I get to keep my head, but if I'm just the guy out there preparing the way and crying out for change, and people say, yeah, change is needed, but we're going to go with this guy, I will 100% support that as long as they're committed to the change.
State Rep and Dr. Tom Oliverson and candidate for Texas House Speaker, TomOliverson.com. And that's also the X feed, Tom Oliverson, there on Twitter X. Pleasure to meet you, sir. And thank you. And we'll be talking, I'm sure.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
You bet. Congressman, let's not get ahead of ourselves. He just wants to be state, so it's supposed to be House Speaker. State Rep and Dr. Tom Oliverson, District 130. It is 8:54.
They got respect. Oh, yeah, he wants the same.
Eagles from Desperado.
Oh, yeah.
Certain kind of fool. So as we head into the 9 o'clock hour, let me give you the phone number, 866-660-5759. We can play that little game we play often called How'd That Work Out For You? That was Dr. Tom Oliverson, and that was pretty great. I don't know what the competition's going to be like. I guess we'll find out. Let's slice and dice a little bit of what the good doctor gave us and see if he needs to be Texas Speaker of the House. Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. Stick around.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.